a production of South Dakota Public Broadcasting.
Senate Ag and Natural Resources will come to order. Good morning and welcome to the Senate Ag Committee. We have a full room. I saw many of you folks over in the House Ag, and we're lucky and excited to have the chairman of the House Agricultural Committee with us today. We have a full agenda. We do have two more committee hearings yet today and on Thursday, and we have seven bills up for Thursday, so we do have a full agenda. So I am going to take the bills in order, and we're going to try to get through them as we can today and hopefully complete our agenda. So at this time, I will have the secretary call the roll.
Senators Ewing.
Here.
Frerichs. Lucas.
Here.
Amdahl.
Here.
Otten.
Here.
Roden.
Here.
Valley. Rampelberg.
Here.
Krebs.
Here. A quorum is present. For those of you testifying today, make sure that you do sign in over here at the podium and just state your name when you do come forth to testify, if you are, and clarify for those that are listening on the internet. So at this time, I'm not going to waste any more time. I do need to have an approval for the minutes. Moved by Senator Amdahl, seconded by Senator Rampelberg. All those in favor of the approval of the minutes stated in your book signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Minutes are so approved. Now we can start our agenda with House Bill 1187. It's an act to provide alternative brand inspection procedures for certain rodeo livestock. I'm looking for proponent testimony on House Bill 1187. Welcome.
Thank you. Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Troy Heinert, District 26A representative from Mission, South Dakota. Bill 1187 provides an annual inspection for your bulls and your steers used in rodeos. That's all it does. It doesn't allow you to sell them. It doesn't allow you to take them to butcher. It just gives these guys that are putting their bulls and steers on trucks every weekend an opportunity where they don't have to have an inspector look over these animals each time. A lot of times you're traveling at night because you're in the summer, it's hot. You're going to multiple places, maybe within a weekend. It provides just that annual inspection. So I think we've worked with the brand board. They're on board with it. I think you'll hear from the stock growers. I think we've kind of ironed out all the wrinkles, and it's a good bill. I hope you approve it, and I will stand by for any questions.
Thank you, Representative Heinert. Further proponent testimony to House Bill 1187. Further proponent testimony. Larry, could you turn your mic on? I think it's off. The green light.
Okay. How's that?
Please state your name again. Thank you.
Larry Stearns. I'm the director of the brand board. We come in as a proponent to this bill as well. One of the things that Representative Heinert didn't mention is that this is a proposal to allow the brand board to establish a fee for a permit of this type. Right at the current time, the board is able to allow this type of permit using a administrative rules hearing, but there's going to be a lot of extra work once we do our initial inspection on these to keep the permits current and whatnot. Most of the rules will be established through the Rules Committee, of course, which would include a requirement for an initial brand inspection, a local inspection, the process for revoking a permit if there is a violation of some sort. This would also be in the rules. This isn't part of the legislation, but these are some of the issues that have come up in the discussions. And also establishing the fee. And as Representative Heinert said, this is strictly for transportation. It's a seasonal permit. The animals will be individually identified with the contractor's brand and a PRCA brand if there is one on these animals, but they will be individually identified. With that, I would ask for your support. If I can just take 1 second here, I'd like to introduce Debbie Trapp is the going to be my replacement in about 6 weeks as new director of the brand board.
Thank you, Mr. Stearns. Debbie Trapp, just go ahead and stand up and wave for our committee. You've got big shoes to fill, but nonetheless, so wear your cowboy boots because it does get deep every day. Thank you, Mr. Stearns.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
We'll move for further proponent testimony to House Bill 1187. Further proponents.
Morning, Madam Chair. Welcome back. Members of the Ag Committee, Courtney De La Rosa, South Dakota Department of Agriculture. We also rise in support of House Bill 1187 today. We appreciate Representative Heinert's efforts and anything we can do to make our rodeo producers make it more efficient and effective for them. So we also support this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. De La Rosa, for the proponent testimony.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Jeremiah M. Murphy for the South Dakota Stock Growers Association. And as Representative Heinert noted, and we thank him for working with us, we had some ideas to strengthen the bill. In fact, when the House Ag Committee met and discussed this, our board hadn't had a chance to take a final look at it, so I was in a position I had to give a very soft no. But at the end of that testimony, I said I was confident I'd get a chance for a re-ride. This is my re-ride, and not only am I going to speak for 8 seconds, that's easy, but I didn't see any flags coming out. We really do, in all seriousness, support this bill. Stock growers tend to have a very conservative policy about changes to brand regulations and that sort of thing, and we believe Representative Heinert has come up with good public policy that maintains the security of the brand program and at the same time creates some efficiencies for folks involved in rodeo that make good sense. So we'd urge your support, and I'll stand by. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Murphy. Further proponent testimony? Further proponents. Further proponents to House Bill 1187. Further proponents? Seeing none, I'll move to opponent testimony. Any opponents to House Bill 1187? Opponents? Calling one more time. Opponents? Seeing none, I'll waive the rebuttal, if that's all right, Representative Heinert. You're off the hook, but you have your brand on, so we know that you're who you are and where you come from. At this time, then, I'll move to committee questions.
Madam Chair.
Senator Roden.
For Representative Heineman. Just a quick clarification. In your testimony, you said that this would apply to bulls and steers. I would assume that it includes all rodeo stock, horses, calves, bulls, and steers. Is that accurate?
Representative Heinert.
Madam Chair. Thank you, Senator Roden. Currently, South Dakota has a lifetime and an annual permit on horses right now. This would include, I guess you could, there's no sense of doing your lifetime on your horse and doing these bulls. We just didn't have anything for bulls and steers. You could get your horses done, but we didn't have anything for bulls and steers.
Thank you. Follow up? For the questions of the committee? Excuse me, Senator Lucas.
I'd ask one for Representative Heinert, too. Obviously, it took a number of years for somebody with forward thinking to bring this issue forth. So what have they been doing in the past? They haven't been inspecting then the steers that they've been taking in for the roping? Are you having somebody come out there every morning when you load them up to take them to the rodeo?
Representative Heinert.
Madam Chair, thank you, Senator Lucas. Right now, every time they cross that river, if you're going to cross the river to the east, they need to be inspected. If you're leaving the state, they need to be inspected. And for the most part, I think people are getting them inspected. Are there some that aren't? Probably. But for the most part, I think they are.
Follow up, Senator Lucas. Further questions of the committee? Further questions of the committee? Further questions? Seeing none, I'll move to committee discussion and or action. Senator Otten. Do pass by Senator Otten, seconded by Senator Ferrix. Comments on the do pass motion?
I just think that it's a well thought out bill and covers everything.
Further comments on the do pass? Further comments on the do pass? Seeing none, then there's a do pass motion before you on House Bill 1187. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. The Secretary will call the roll.
Sanders Ewing.
Aye.
Ferrix.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Amdahl.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 9 yeas.
House Bill 1187 moves to the Senate floor. Senator Lucas has a consent motion.
Second.
Oh, there's a fee increase. There is a fee. Yeah.
Oh, okay.
Yep. We're going to move. I have a consent motion, but there is a fee increase, so we'll waive that. I didn't hear that from you, Senator Lucas. All right. Moving on to the agenda item, we have number two on our agenda is House Bill 1017. It's an act to establish and revise certain provisions, bond amounts, fees, and penalties related to the regulation of grain warehouses and grain buyers, and to declare an emergency. But before we move forward, if you don't mind, Mr. Commissioner, Ken, do you have some folks in the audience you'd like to say hello to or welcome to the Electric Co-op Day, Ken?
This is Rural Electric Co-op Day at the legislature. We have lunch in the rotunda today, and we have many people that are, I guess, the ones that are wearing these buttons, plus the green vest. So
welcome. Yeah, welcome. Please, welcome to our committee. We're glad you're here. Thank you for having them join us today, Ken, and the rest of you. Mr. Vice Chair, I may have to step out. I have another bill up, so I may have to step out. I'll kind of watch, so just when you're ready. But further, nonetheless, let's move on. House Bill 1017, asking for proponent testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, Chris Nelson, Public Utilities Commissioner. And before I begin, I'd like to acknowledge I have with me Jim Melhoff, who is the director of our Grain Warehouse Division, and he has been instrumental in helping us pull this bill together and getting us to this point. Last week, we spent a lot of time talking about the fact that we had a grain buyer insolvency in South Dakota, and that particular event in 2012 led us to say, what do we need to make sure this kind of thing doesn't happen again? And so we began looking at what legislative fix do we need, and in doing that, we established some principles, first of all, and the principles were this. We wanted the tools to find these problems sooner. Secondly, we did not want to overregulate the grain buyer industry. Third, we didn't want to take money out of agriculture that didn't need to be. And I think this bill encapsulates all of those principles. The other comment that I'd like to make before I get into the actual bill is this. You'll say 11 pages. Why do we need 11 pages to solve this? And the answer to that is we have one set of statutes that regulate grain buyers and a second set of statutes that regulate grain warehouses. And what this bill does is seeks to make the language between those two licensing chapters identical. And so you will see a lot of duplication here as we go through the bill. If I might, Mr. Chairman, Section 1 matches with Section 10, and I will give you those comparisons so you can see both the grain buyer and the grain warehouse sections. Sections 1 and Sections 10 allow us to require licensees to give us current financial information when they come in for relicensure. And that was really the biggest problem with the Anderson Grain situation. Currently, they're required to give us their last audited financial statement from their last year end. And in the case of Anderson, that happened to be 9 months old. And what this is going to do is require not only that, but also current information when they come in for licensure. This also is going to require that information be provided to us under penalty of perjury. Moving to Section 2. Section 2 pairs with Sections 11 and 14, and this is the fee required for a license renewal. You'll see an increase in fee, but the reason for that is that over in Section 14, we are repealing a requirement that grain buyers have decals on each of the trucks that they might use to truck grain into their facility. That decal requirement is really antiquated, no longer needed, and so we're repealing that, but in order to make the bill revenue neutral, we're increasing the licensing fee to offset the loss of those decal fees. Section 3 pairs with Section 16 and Section 5. And essentially what this does is say that when our inspectors go in to inspect a facility, they have to be allowed to actually do their job and do their inspection without being inhibited from access to the records. And that if a facility would happen to impede our inspector, that would be something that the inspectors could bring before the commission to begin a licensure suspension proceeding. There would be full due process involved in that, but essentially that would be something that could be brought in front of the commission. Section 4 pairs with existing Section 15 and also enforces that our inspectors have the ability to get at the financial information that's held by the grain warehouses or the grain buyers, and that they could make copies of that information for as part of their inspection, but that those copies would not become a public record. Section 6 pairs with Section 20, and this says that if, and we're seeing this more frequently, that grain buyers or warehouses may be subsidiaries of parent companies, and frequently the parent company will insure the finances of that subsidiary, and this codifies the fact that that they do in fact have that responsibility. Section 7 pairs with Section 17, and this is what we're calling the self-reporting mechanism. And what this says is if you're a grain buyer or warehouse and you fall below the financial requirements to remain a licensed facility, you can't just cover that up. You have to call the PUC and say, hey, this is my situation, self-reporting that. And at that point, then, the PUC, our staff, will determine, is this a temporary financial bump in the road for this outfit, and they've got a solid plan to continue, or is this something that needs to begin a license suspension proceeding so that farmers don't lose money? And you'll notice that as part of this, there is a criminal penalty involved. And so that grain buyer that may fall below the requirements to operate really has a choice to make. They can either call the PUC and say, hey, here's my problem, or they risk going to jail, and we think that most are going to say, we're going to make that phone call and then see where it plays out from there. Section 8 pairs with Section 19, and this just clarifies that if a criminal penalty is imposed, who in fact is responsible for that. Section 9, there's only one change, and that is on page 5, line 2, where we've added pulse crops to the definition of what's covered under the grain buyer statutes. We've obviously got a pulse crop plant that's contemplated for central South Dakota, and we feel that ought to be covered. Section 12 is the section that lays out the actual bond requirements for grain buyers. We've had a lot of conversation about that, and you will see that we have expanded the number of categories. And what I'm calling this is we've really tried to right-size the category for the amount of grain that's being purchased. In the case of Anderson, this particular section would have increased their bond from $100,000 to $150,000. Not dramatic. And we are not seeking dramatic increases in the bond, but rather modest increases in some cases. Section 13 simply clarifies that any cash purchases must be paid for no later than 30 days by the elevator, making sure that they keep their books current, realizing that any cash seller has the absolute right to get paid within 48 hours if they so request. Section 18 is a new section, and this applies to if a facility has out-of-state locations, and Anderson would be a good example of that, where their headquarters was in Minnesota. This would say that if there's information our inspectors need that's actually held at that out-of-state headquarters, they have to provide that to us within 5 days in-state. They can't hide it and simply say, well, you can't have access because it's out-of-state. It gives us the authority to get that. And the last thing I would mention, over on the House side, we did add an amendment to make this bill effective on April 1st, and the reason for that is all of our licenses renew on July 1st, and so we are going through that licensing period in May and June, and we feel it's imperative to have these new statutes in place for this new licensing period as opposed to waiting a whole nother year for these additional protections. Madam Chair, with that, I would be happy to answer questions when appropriate.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner, and I appreciate the testimony. Further proponents on House Bill 1017. Further proponents? Good morning.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I'm Kathy Zander, and I am the executive director and lobbyist for the South Dakota Grain and Feed Association. And I'm just here to ask you to support this bill. We had several meetings with Commissioner Nelson and Jim Elhoff, and we worked out a lot of details for the bill and would, again, ask you to support the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Zander. Further proponents? Further proponents to House Bill 1017. Good morning.
Good morning. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Brenda Foreman. I am registered lobbyist and executive director for South Dakota Association of Cooperatives. Commissioner Nelson has gone through the bill in detail, and what we'd first like to thank is the commissioner and his staff for their willingness to work with the industry throughout the summer as issues came up, and we found that there are changes that needed to be made within our process to make sure that reporting is done in a more timely manner and we get the information that everyone needs as businesses want to serve the public better. 1017 does just that for the Public Utilities Commission, and we would encourage your support for the bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Foreman. Further proponents? Good morning,
Mike. Good morning, members of the committee. My name is Mike Traxinger. I'm the registered lobbyist for the South Dakota Farmers Union. We also rise today in support of this piece of legislation that the PUC has put forth. We do appreciate the conversations that they had with regards to this piece of legislation and the work that they have done on this bill in particular. We do believe it is a move in the right direction, but as you can tell by the length of the bill, it is a complex issue, and we think these conversations should continue to be had as we move forward to make sure that the concerns that have been brought up throughout the legislation continue throughout and that all those are met in the future. So we appreciate the work of the PUC, the Commissioner, and Mr. Melhoff, and encourage your support of 1017. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Traxinger. Mr. Traxinger, further, excuse me about that. Further proponents.
Madam Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Rick Vow. I'm registered lobbyist for South Dakota Wheat Incorporated and for South Dakota Pulse Growers. We just want to add our thoughts to the bill. We appreciate the commission moving forward on these ideas. We think that they are appropriate and that they will be beneficial for future use, and so we would encourage your passage of 1017. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ballery. Further proponents to House Bill 1017. Further proponents? Seeing none, I'll move to opponent testimony on House Bill 1017. Opponent testimony to House Bill 1017. Opponents? Seeing none, then, Mr. Commissioner, I'll waive the rebuttal. I'll waive that for possible committee questions, and I'll move it to committee questions. Questions from the committee? Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Commissioner Nelson. It's in Section 7 where it states that an operator becomes aware and say that they're one of the employees, and then they report what they think is something that's not financially up on standard or par, and it turns out to be a false accusation, and that person gets fired. Is there any protections related to that? For that individual?
Mr. Commissioner?
Madam Chair, if I might. Now, this does not deal with employment law whatsoever, and so I think the direct answer to that would be no. But if I might just expand on how we see this playing out, and the two financial criteria that we're looking at here is net worth and working capital. And if either of those falls into a negative situation, those are the things that would trigger the licensee having to report to our staff. And realizing that's going to be a report to Mr. Melhoff and his people, and at that point, he's going to do an evaluation, as I said before. Is this a temporary blip in the road that you're going to be able to work through? You've got a good plan? Or is this something that needs to trigger a due process license suspension hearing? And in that case, it would become a public matter, and he would bring it before the commission, and we would determine as a commission whether or not the license would need to be suspended.
Follow-up, Senator Lucas?
I guess I just would feel better if there was protections in there for the employees to come forth with what they feel are maybe that they're not paying the producers promptly enough, or if some of the money is going through a third party before they're paying the producers. And I'd hate to see some employees get chastised or be fearful of reporting because they're afraid of losing their job.
Follow up, Mr. Commissioner?
You know, I other than we didn't intend to get into employment law with this, I really don't have a response to that. Other than I can say this, I think that the fact that that report is going to Mr. Melhoff and it will be a confidential report while he's doing his particular investigation and really will only become public if he determines that it needs to trigger a license suspension. And so if it's a false report, he's going to be able to determine that, and it never will become a public matter.
Further questions? Senator Rampelberg, then. Senator Rampelberg.
It's for you, Commissioner.
Yes.
You know, as I'm looking through the bill here, and the first Thank you. It talks about it shall contain financial information depicting the financial condition of the business. You know, as a banker, right away I say, well, who is this? You know, what kind of a financial statement is this? Is this a reviewed one, or is it a compilation, or is it an audited one? And we've had a lot of mischief, as you know, over the years with different companies filing, even when they've had big CPA firms. So my question of you is, will there be rules or something that will determine, because I don't know about what the codified law already says, but you know where I'm going there.
Absolutely, and we've had that question from a number of different people as we've worked through this particular bill. And interestingly, all of those questions come from bankers or CPAs, and that's a good thing. And so our answer is yes. The exact requirement, we believe, should be prescribed in administrative rule, and realizing this is going to be in addition to the current requirement that they give us, that reviewed financial statement, but this is going to be exactly what current pieces of financial information do they need to provide, and how are those calculated?
Follow up.
Let me just foot stomp that, Commissioner. So, you know, in the banking business, when we see something gets into trouble, we start monitoring it monthly or quarterly or whatever it might be. Is that what you're just saying in the details? Thank you.
This particular section is going to deal with the licensure process. And so if they are submitting financial information that does not put them in a position to be issued a license, at that point, then our staff would determine you're not going to get a license to operate. But what you're speaking to really goes to that Section 7 that Senator Lucas was talking about, is that if they come to us and there's a financial problem, at that point, if Mr. Melhoff determines that this is something that they can work through, they're going to be monitoring them very, very closely. And we've got one location in the state right now that we're monitoring on a weekly basis. But we believe that they've got a plan to work through that, but that's how we respond.
For the questions of the committee. Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Commissioner Nelson, thank you for your in-depth synopsis on what the bill will do for us today. If you look at Section 12, as far as the bond amounts, just curious if you could share any logic that may have been used when you look at the 55 to 70 million and the 70 million to 85 million being in that 450,000 for bond requirement, whereas current statute, you know, those roughly, aside from the 55 is a little low, but the 60 was a threshold for 500,000. Any reason why those were adjusted to actually even decrease, the way I'm reading it anyways, it would decrease the bond amount for somebody who's in that, you know, 60 to, 70, 60 to 85 million.
Certainly, if I might, and this same logic is going to apply at the bottom end of the scale. When you look at, 60 to 100 million, that's a pretty broad category for one particular bond amount. And what we really wanted to do is try to break this into some smaller categories to try to right-size the bond. And in some of those cases, like you've mentioned, that is actually going to decrease it, but it's probably closer to the appropriate amount. And so we simply wanted to have smaller categories so that the bond would more appropriately fit.
Follow-up, Senator Frerichs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I certainly understand, as you look further, as you mentioned, below the bond requirements, it gives for anything over $100 million as far as it's $25,000 for each additional $10 million. So I suppose you try to follow that stair step anyways. So.
For the question, Senator Valley.
Thank you, Madam Chair. You know, being in that business for a good share of my life, and we were a federal warehouse for most of that time, but we got a lot of different contracts out there. There's price later contracts, basis fixed contracts, deferred payment contracts. When you look at the financials, I'm assuming you walk through that to make sure they've got enough reserves, especially if you got deferred payment contracts and those basis fixed contracts. Sometimes it hasn't been priced, but they sell it, and there's a lot of contingent liability that's laying there. And could you just kind of explore that a little with us to give us some comfort level there?
I'm going to do two things, if I might, Madam Chair. I'm going to give you the easy answer, which is yes, and then I'm going to ask for permission for Mr. Melhoff, who is the guy that actually does that, to give you, I think, the more in-depth answer that you deserve, Senator, if I might.
Thank you, Mr. Commissioner. Good morning, Mr. Malhoff.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee.
Please state your name for the record. Thank you.
Jim Malhoff. I'm the director of the Grain Warehouse Division for the Public Utilities Commission. And with regard to the VCS, which we refer to as voluntary credit sale contracts, which are the ones that defer payment, either through pricing the grain and deferring the payment to a later date, or leaving the grain unpriced and to be priced and paid at a later date. All of those bushels show up in the balance sheet as a liability on their books, and they're offset by the assets as well. For example, if the grain is still in-house and it's company-owned grain that's unpaid, it'll show up as an asset on their balance sheet. And because it's not paid, it'll also show up as a liability to be paid at a later date. So it all kind of balances out in the balance sheet, and that is something that we do look at when we do an inspection. We compare all the unpaid company-owned grain. We identify it, where it is on the balance sheet, and we make sure that there are assets there to cover it.
Follow-up, Senator Bally.
Those deferred payments, you don't do any auditing of that, though. Would that be correct? I mean, do you send out notices to so many of their customers to find out if they have deferred payments? Because that's where you could really get into trouble and no one know about it. That was always my concern when I was in that business with, you know, our individual elevators, is I want to see your deferred price contracts. And then I would, you know, kind of keep track in my mind who used to do that and see if they were still, if they were still in that pile for this year. You know, I just want to make sure we didn't have any. And that's always my concern, is that those things kind of disappear into the woodwork.
Mr. Malhoff.
Yes, we do look at that. I mean, we look at it on the DPR. We identify that grain on their daily position report, which it has to be there. Then we tie those bushels to the daily position report through auditing their customer status report. So we identify all those bushels have to add up to this total, and then we go the next step, and then we take a look at the actual written contracts. And we do have some, and coincidentally, we are currently working with a grain buyer that has some of those from the 90s. We're actually making sure that those customers are aware that grain is sitting there unpriced or unpaid. But it is reflected in the balance sheets.
Follow-up, Senator Bally?
Thank you.
For the questions of the committee, Senator Ferrix?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know we have many bills yet to get through today, but I just would say, and this could be for either Mr. Malhoff or Nelson, I would say, this weekend at one of our Cracker Barrels, we had a little discussion about this issue up at Britain, and it was an old elevator manager, kind of like Senator Valley was referencing. He's been in the business. I necessarily wouldn't call him an old manager, but
like Senator Valley.
Yeah. But I would say the question that was brought up is, you know, how can we have more of these? And I realize this is focused more on the warehouse side of things, but of course grain buyers are affected as well. But how can we have more alignment with the Commodity Credit Corporation, or, you know, CCC, that we use? Obviously, various producers will use for a financing mechanism for a, you know, low interest loan or whatever it may be for grain. But those rules, anyways, it sounded like we're you know, pretty well understood where folks had to be. Has there been any alignment with those federal rules as you look at this legislation before us right now?
You know, Senator, I'm not sure that I've got a good answer for that, and I'm going to...
Mr. Malhoff?
Madam Chair, Jim Malhoff again. I think what you're asking me is there some alignment between the state licensing financial requirements and those of the USDA, the Federal Warehouse Act, and the CCC contracts? Madam Chair, many of our state licensed warehouses enter into a uniform grain and rice storage agreement with the Commodity Credit Corporation, and they're required to meet the requirements that are in place by the CCC in order to have that agreement in place. And when they have that, then they're authorized to store CCC-owned grain.
Okay.
So with respect to the USDA, it's this, the Warehouse Act, they have a different way of looking at things with regard to the financial requirements. I know they have a much higher net worth requirement, but they're a lot softer. I guess they have a lot more play in their working capital requirements, where they'll allow a line of credit as working capital, where we do not. So, but again, our bonding requirements are much different on the warehouse side. We require 50% of the actual value of the stored grain to be bonded at 50%. The federal warehouse program has a cap. I believe it's $500,000. Well, if you have 100,000 bushels of soybeans, that is not a lot of coverage.
Follow-up, Senator Ferrigs.
Well, Madam Chair, thank you, and thanks to Mr. Medeloff for willing to explain that a little bit more. Not to mean to put you on the spot, but you did well, so thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Medeloff. Further questions of the committee? Further questions of the committee? Further questions? Seeing none, I'll move to committee discussion and or action.
Chair.
Senator Roden.
Move do pass.
Do pass by Senator Roden, seconded by Senator Ferrigs. Comments on the do pass motion, Senator Roden? Further comments on the do pass motion on House Bill 1017? Senator Ferrigs.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Obviously, we see in today's day and age volatility as a standard for our grain markets. And, you know, this legislation before us obviously is due to a result of that, of the Anderson seed issue, which, again, our folks at the PUC would hopefully be looking at their various rules and regulations and bond requirements regularly, but this is the reason, obviously, that it's before us. But back to the volatility, that's something that those of us on an ag committee like this and as leaders in the state to look out for the 23,000 constituents or so we have in our districts, you know, it's a pretty big task because we know that we have many very, very good operating businesses out there, but at the same time, I mean, we can see 30-cent swings a day or per bushel, sometimes even more in this grain market. So, and that's really going to be something that looks like is here to stay. So I think it's worthwhile legislation. Obviously, there still is probably more work to be done. I just hope that we don't forget about this issue and only revisit it when there is another problem. I hope we can at least be proactive. So, thank you, Madam Chair.
Further comments on the do pass? Further comments on the do pass? Seeing none, there's a do pass motion before you on House Bill 1017. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary will call the roll.
Senators Ewing.
Aye.
Prerichs.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Amdahl.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 9 yeas.
House Bill 1017 moves the floor for the Senate floor for further debate.
Thank you.
Seeing the next item on our agenda is House Bill 1059, which is an act to repeal and revise certain obsolete and unnecessary statutes and rules relating to the Department of Environmental and Natural Resources. So looking for proponent testimony for 1059.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Steve Perner, Secretary of the Department of Environment and Natural Resources. We bring you this morning House Bill 1059. This is our DNR's repealer bill. These bills come to you as a result of Governor Dugard's red tape review. Last year, we brought you a fairly substantial bill to repeal laws and rules. Governor Dugard said last year you did good, but I want more this year. So this year, we bring you House Bill 1059. It's 96 pages long. I think it has the honor of being the largest repealer bill this year. It repeals 299 sections or portions thereof of rules and code, and all of these have either been executed or duplicative or obsolete. Now, we won't go through all 299 sections, but to give you a quick executive summary of what's in the bill, sections 1 through 15, which is about 5% of the bill, repeal air pollution control statutes and SDCL 34A-1 that are obsolete. Sections 33 to 41 of the bill, which is about 3% of the bill, repeal petroleum inspection and release compensation compensation statutes found in SDCL 34A-13. The reason those are in there is the Petroleum Release Compensation Fund used to be in the Department of Revenue, and in 2011, Governor Dugard, through an executive order, transferred the Petroleum Release Compensation Fund to DENR. Consequently, we went through their statutes. We found some of their statutes are duplicated in other chapters of 34A that we also administer. Consequently, we can repeal those. Sections 42 through 98, which is about 20% of the bill, repeal what's called the Petroleum Environmental Compliance Authority that's found in SDCL 34A-14. These were statutes that were passed by the legislature in 1988. They authorized the Petroleum Release Compensation Board to issue bonds to help finance petroleum storage tank upgrades. That was 25 years ago, and the statutes have never been used. Consequently, we can repeal those. And then sections 118 through 299, which is the largest portion of the bill, that's about 60% of the bill, repeal something that's called the Sendak Irrigation District that's found in SDCL 46A-7A. Now you say, what is the Sendak project? Well, when the federal government passed the Flood Control Act of 1944, South Dakota was promised a lot of irrigation, basically to replace the 500,000 acres that were flooded by the dams. The largest irrigation project that was promised us was called the Owyhee Project. That was supposed to take water from the Owyhee Reservoir all the way across to the Jim River through large canals. That project got into trouble with local opposition. Consequently, it was reformatted into something called the Sendak Project to try to basically save that project. The legislature passed those statutes in sections 118 and through 299 in 1985 to create the district that would oversee the Sendak Irrigation Project. That was more than 20 years ago. Since then, nothing has happened to that project. With the federal deficit, we don't see any federal funding for new irrigation projects. Consequently, we were proposing to repeal all those statutes. Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 1059 will help further streamline government. It will eliminate unnecessary code and rules by repealing a total of 28,704 words from the code and from our rules. This is a good government bill that reduces the number of laws and rules on the books that are no longer used or needed. We urge your support of House Bill 1059.
Thank you, Mr. Perner. Further proponents to House Bill 1059. Further proponents to House Bill 1059. Further proponents. Further proponents, seeing none. Are there any opponents to 1059? Opponents to 1059. Opponents to 1059. Seeing none, I'll waive the rebuttal. Move to committee questions. Questions from the committee. Senator Lucas.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a question for Secretary Perner. I recall that Sendex project, and I know that they started doing some digging for a couple miles, 2 or 3 miles here, east of here, and it ended. So was that land taken there from eminent domain, and did it revert back to the landowners there? Do you recall?
Madam Chair, you're absolutely right. They did start building some canals just outside of Pier. I'm speaking a little bit without total knowledge, but it seems to me that there was Congress-passed legislation a couple of years ago that basically let the original landowners purchase back that land. I believe that's the status. Again, I'm not entirely sure, but I think that's the status of that land.
Follow-up, Senator Lucas. Further questions of the committee? Further questions of the committee? Further questions? Seeing none, I'll move to committee discussion and or action. Discussion and or action. Senator Rampelberg.
Madam Chair.
Senator Rampelberg.
Madam Chair, I move do pass on House Bill 1059.
Do pass by Senator Rampelberg, seconded by Senator Frerichs. Comments on the do pass motion?
Well, I used to have a problem with insomnia, but now I just have this bill. No, I have no comments. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Further comments on the do-pass motion? Further comments on the do-pass motion? Seeing none, there's a do-pass motion on House Bill 1059. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Opposed, nay. Secretary, call the roll.
Senator Ewing.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Amdahl.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Krebs.
Aye.
Madam Chair, there are 9 yeas.
House Bill 1059 moves to the floor for further debate.
Madam Chair.
Yes, Senator Roden.
Move consent.
Move consent by Senator Roden, seconded by Senator Valley. All those in favor of the consent motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed? House House Bill 1059 goes on consent, which the consent calendar, for those of you that are in the audience, it's something that is, since there was no opposition to the bill and there really wouldn't be probably any debate on the bill, somebody can pull it off the calendar for a debate, but this would go on a consent motion, which would mean a package of bills would be voted on as a floor because there was no opposition to it. But somebody, one individual, can pull it if they so choose for a debate. Moving on for further agenda items then, we have House Bill 1062, an act to repeal and reenact certain provisions regarding forestry and fire suppression. Proponent testimony to House Bill 1062.
Good morning, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Courtney De La Rosa, South Dakota Department of Agriculture. I bring to you House Bill 1062. To give you a little history, in 1984, the Division of Resource Conservation and Forestry was transferred to the Department of Agriculture. However, the statutes pertaining to resource conservation and forestry remain under the Game, Fish, and Parks Division of the Code. This bill would move those statutes pertaining to that division under the chapter that deals with the rest of the Department of Agriculture. In 2000, in a response to the Jasper Fire out in the Black Hills, Governor Janklow separated resource conservation and forestry from wildland fire, but wildland fire was never codified as a division in law. So we'd like to do that through this bill. You'll notice a name change. We'd no longer like to look at them as the Division of Wildland Fire Suppression, but just the Division of Wildland Fire, reason being that those folks do so much more than just suppress wildfires. It's also fuels mitigation, education, prevention, all the other things that those folks do. So all this bill does is move statutes around, making it easier, streamlining government, making these statutes easier to locate and utilize. And I ask your support for House Bill 1062, and I will stand by for questions.
Thank you. Other proponents for House Bill 1062? Other proponents for House Bill 1062? You're all by yourself today, Ms. De La Rosa. Well, we have no other proponents. Let's move to opponents. Are there opponents to House Bill 1062? Opponents? Opponents? Seeing there are no opponents, we'll waive rebuttal and move to questions from committee. Questions from the committee. Boy, it's a quiet bunch today. Let's move then to discussion and or action. Senator Ewing.
Mr. Chairman, I move do pass.
We have a do pass motion. Is there a second? We have a second from Senator Ferrix. Can't remember his name. discussion on the motion. Senator Ewing, anything to comment? Other discussion? Sensing none, I sense that everyone's ready to vote. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Ewing.
Aye.
Ferrix.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Amdahl.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Valley. Rampelberg.
Aye.
Krebs. Valley is excused. There are 8 yeas, 1 excuse. Oh, Krebs is not here either, is she? Sorry. 7 yeas and 2 excused.
Thank you, Madam Secretary. House Bill 1062 is by a majority, even we have a majority of those that are here, have passed this one. Moving down to the Senate, to the Senate floor. Yes.
Move consent.
We have a motion for consent. Second by Senator Ferrix. All those in discussion. All those in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Motion carried. We'll move to the consent calendar. Moving right along. Let's move then to House Bill 1083. House Bill 1083. Do we have proponents for House Bill 1083? I guess we will. Let's just stop and look at this for a moment here now. Yes.
The page just went to get Ms. Solson.
Okay. Let's move on then to House Bill 1093. Do we have proponents for House Bill 1093? Welcome, Representative Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Charlie Hoffman, District 23, lifetime cattle rancher,
and big game hunting enthusiast. So we bring to you House Bill 1093, which is to allow the use of dogs to hunt mountain lions and leash dogs to track and retrieve wounded or presumed dead big game animals. It has never been put into statute in the state of South Dakota to allow a dog that has been trained to track the scent, most of the time blood, of a deer. With the help of the Game Fish and Parks, and allowing in this bill, we amended it that they will be able to promulgate rules allowing the legal, safe, and great anticipation of a new industry in hunting dogs to be allowed to track deer, many of them wounded. Most of the time, I think by the time they find them, they're probably dead. But therein lies the addition of allowing dogs also to hunt, to be used in seasons of mountain lions. So it's a new movement in the state that hasn't been done before, and I think you'll probably hear some proponent testimony even coming from the Game Fish and Parks, which adds, I believe, a new level of validity to this bill. And Senator Monroe and I have been working on this together, and I was going to allow him to be the first proponent, but being that my good friend that was supposed to be promoting the bill before mine was inadvertently detained somewhere else. So with that, unless Senator Monroe wants to say anything, sir, I ask you to move this with a do-pass motion to the Senate floor so we can get it on the governor's desk. Mr. Chairman, thank you very much for your time.
Thank you, Representative Hoffman. For the proponents of House Bill 1093, for the proponents, Mr. Life, welcome.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the Senate Ag and Natural Resources Committee. Tony Life, Director of the Wildlife Division for the Department of Game, Fish, and Parks. This past summer, we had a gentleman who contacted our department with an interest in creating an allowance to help hunters who had wounded big game retrieve those animals using dogs. It's an allowance that's used in many other states. Came to us, we had discussed, you know, some initial concerns. We believe those concerns were put to rest, and in particular, the provision of the statute, or excuse me, of the bill that requires that dog be on a leash. That's a key component, I think, in making this thing work. And Mr. Eckridge, who approached us with that original idea, was comfortable with that, and therefore we are here comfortable supporting this bill to make that allowance. I think it's important to point out, because there's a portion of this bill that pertains to hunting of mountain lions. And if you look at the stricken language in the bill right now, you will see that there previously was an exemption in place for the use of mountain lions for the use of dogs in hunting mountain lions. But currently, there are provisions in administrative rule to allow dogs to be used for hunting of mountain lions. We had a first period here. It was in early February where four hunters were licensed to use dogs while hunting mountain lions in Custer State Park. One of those hunters was successful in harvesting an animal, and there is a second period of hunting that where a second set of four hunters are going to be allowed into Custer State Park to hunt mountain lions with dogs. That period, I believe, starts this Saturday and will run for 8 days, so those four hunters will also have the opportunity there. So what this does is kind of realigns the language to accommodate both exceptions for the use of dogs in hunting a big game, one for mountain lion hunting and the second one here to allow this leash dog to retrieve these wounded animals. With that, I'll be happy to stand by for any questions that the committee might have, but we would ask for your favorable support of House Bill 1093.
Thank you, Mr. Life. Further proponents of House Bill 1093. For the proponents, do we have a taker? Yes, we do. Welcome. Please state your name.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman, members of the committee. My name is Robert Bob Barden, and I represent South Dakota Bowhunters Incorporated. Concerning the mountain lion issue, we definitely embrace this proposal, because for a bow hunter to bag a mountain lion any other way other than with dogs is nearly impossible. On occasion, someone would call one in and be successful. On occasion, one would shoot one incidental to elk hunting or what have you in some other state. So we certainly like this proposal. concerning the tracking of a wounded animal with a dog on a leash. We support this also. It's our philosophy that every ethical hunter should do everything reasonable to try and collect any big game animal that he's been hit, whether with a bullet or with an arrow. And this gives one more method of doing that. And we certainly support the idea that the dog should be on the leash. And I should mention, too, that the Pope and Young Club, which, among other things, records trophy big game animals taken with bow and arrow, does have a position statement on this. And they have set the standard for ethical hunting by bow hunting. And they allow the entry of animals into the record book when they've been tracked with a dog, if the dog is on a leash. So we urge your support for this bill. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mr. Barden. Further proponents for House Bill 1093. Further proponents, House Bill 1093. Let's move then to opponents. Are there opponents to House Bill 1093? Opponents? Well, I see no opponents who will waive rebuttal and move to questions from the committee. Questions? Senator Valley.
Question for Mr. Light. When we allowed hunting of mountain lions in Custer State Park, was that kind of to be an experiment, or are we trying to, and it worked, so now we're okay with opening it up? I'm just kind of curious why we own it. I can't remember. Help refresh my memory why we did that in Custer State Park.
Mr. Leaf?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, Senator Valley, that was something that was just initiated this year. There has been a movement. There was a movement a couple of years ago to try to get this going. There was sufficient opposition to the move at that time to where the commission chose not to make the allowance. But this year, I think there was sufficient interest and movement, and those individuals in particular that had dogs that wanted to hunt mountain lions saw this as a step. I can't tell you where the commission will go in the future, but I think from all accounts so far, with the first period gone by, that it's gone reasonably well. I haven't heard any reason for future opposition, but again, I can't predict where it'll go in the future for the rest of the Black Hills.
Thank you.
Follow up? Senator Roden.
Well, as long as you're up there, and to tie onto that question, I recall when we had legislation in years past, several years ago, to allow mountain lions, one of the biggest areas of opposition came from the dogs tracking onto private land. Is that not an issue specifically in the park, and is that a consideration in this?
Mr. Chair, Senator Rowan, it's good recollection, sir. Yes, there was some concern when we do have, if we were able to allow hounds to be used outside of the park, that the checkerboard nature of ownership would cause for some conflicts. Obviously, the 70,000 acres contained within Custer Park are fenced, and it's a single ownership. So, yes, those problems are avoided in that situation.
You.
Follow up? Further questions? Senator Lucas?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Another question for Mr. Life. What's the penalty for tracking big game then with dogs that aren't leashed?
Mr. Life?
The use of dogs for hunting a big game it looks like if you look at the bill itself, there's a violation of the section is subject to 41.818. I don't have that one in front of me. I could look it up quickly, but I suspect that there's a penalty provision associated with 41.818. And I can't tell you offhand whether that is a Class 1 or a Class 2 misdemeanor.
And just to follow up, we're not currently having any problems with people using unleashed dogs. They're tracking or retrieving big game, are we?
No, sir. Not to my knowledge. We are not having any issues right now.
Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Light. Further questions to the committee? Further questions? Let's move then to discussion and or action. Discussion? Senator Roden.
Move due pass.
We have a motion from Senator Roden for due pass. We have a second from Senator Lucas for due pass on House Bill 1093. Discussion? Senator Roden, any comments? Any other comments? Let's move to vote then. All those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed, nay. Secretary, please call the roll.
Senators Ewing.
Aye.
Frerichs.
Aye.
Lucas.
Aye.
Amdahl.
Aye.
Otten.
Aye.
Roden.
Aye.
Valley.
Aye.
Rampelberg.
Aye.
Krebs is excused. There are eight yeas.
By a motion of the members-elect, House Bill 1093 is approved and will be sent to the... Yes. We have a motion, second, and we have a no. Okay. Thank you, Senator, for the motion. We will then move then House Bill 1093 to the floor for further discussion. Let's move now to House Bill 1083. House Bill 1083, proponents. Welcome, Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I bring to you a simple little bill, 1083, to put sheep and goats back in the statute where it's illegal to wrestle them. That's rustle, not wrestle. I originally brought this because this was one of the concerns that came out of our oil and gas development legislation or summer study committee this year. Up in the oil fields, we've got so many roads and so many lights out there in the pastures because of the oil development that we've had several producers up there that have been losing sheep especially. And that was one of the recommendations that they wanted us to bring, was a bill to put this back into the statute. At one time it had been in the statute. Now, currently it's just cattle, horses, mules, buffalo, and captive non-domestic elk. I would really like to see somebody try to load a buffalo or a non-domestic elk into a horse trailer in the middle of the night with using nothing but a cow dog. But, up there we've had, several people that have lost trailers full of these. Now you'll notice that this has been, hoghoused. And I did the hoghouse because when we passed it out of, House Ag, it came flying out of there and went on consent. And because I had it written to be a class 4 felony, because, you know, we used to hang them, we don't do that anymore, but we wanted to make it really an expensive hobby to steal sheep. But anyway, that class 4 felony was the part that sent it from the consent calendar to the governor's kill list, because it didn't jibe with Senate Bill 70. So I sat down and did a little figuring, and at the price of sheep right now, if you steal a trailer load of sheep, which isn't all that hard out there if you've got a good dog, it's still a class 4 felony, according to this. So I was the one that stripped the class 4 felony out of there, and we have what you see before you here. And I would like to point out what some of the felonies are here. If you just steal $1,000 worth of sheep, it's a class 6 felony. A class 5 felony is if it's more than $2,500 and less than $5,000. A class 4 felony is more than $5,000. And if you load up that many sheep in a horse trailer, it is going to be a class 4 felony. So I'm still good with this. I would hope that you could go ahead and pass it and let us back into not having to hang these guys or anything. We just want them to do a little hard time.
Thank you, Representative. Are there further proponents? I want to make one quick comment, Representative. You know, you don't have any trees up there to hang anybody anyway. What are you talking about? Further proponents of the House Bill 1083. Further proponents, let's move then to opponents. Are there opponents to House Bill 1083? Opponents? Let's move then to questions from the committee. Questions? No questions?
Well, Mr. Chair, I have a question.
Senator Roden.
Representative Olson. You know, I was considering maybe an amendment to this myself.
You know, we used to have sheep. I wondered if it might be more fitting, rather than a Class 5 felony, to make them eligible for a trip to the psych ward for stealing sheep instead.
You know, I would be amendable to that.
Oh, how we go downhill. other questions from the for the representative. Any other questions? Let's move then to discussion and or action.
Sure.
We have a, yes, Senator Frerichs.
I move to pass.
We have a motion for due pass from Senator Frerichs, a second from, who was it down there?
Valley.
Senator Valley. Discussion on the motion.
Sure.
Yes, Senator.
Well, I just have to say that the fellows at Hanson Hall back in the day when I was at SDSU, they're lucky that this wasn't in effect, because just so happened to be one of the sheep units. Sheep ended up on third floor of Hanson Hall, so it wasn't a pretty sight then, but it's going to be even worse after this, so it's probably good for those folks.
Further comments on the motion? Senator Lucas.
Well, I was one of the privileged to serve on Senate Bill 70 this summer, and I did notice the language in this section when we went through the grand theft statutes. And, well, quite frankly, I was more concerned about putting people in prison for stealing something of $1,000 of value. I just question why we want to do that. Most times that people, and this isn't robbery, this is stealing. So, I mean, it isn't like they're robbing them at gunpoint. They steal something of value, and it could be something out of their home or out of their garage or something like that. And usually they get caught. What really happens, the people want their property back, and they want an apology, and they're not too concerned about having the person go to prison as a felony. Now, I would, if we would have had more time this summer, and we were actually, the focus was on the drug and alcohol aspects of our criminals, I would have looked at raising this up for the first class of grand theft. I believe should start at a much higher, either that $2,000 or $5,000 level. So for those reasons, I'm going to oppose this, because I would like to see the grand theft limits raised.
Further questions? Or comments made on the motion? Senator Valley?
No.
Okay. Further questions or comments? Seeing none, and since we're ready to vote, all those in favor, please say aye. Those opposed? Nay. On House Bill 1083, Secretary, please call the roll.
Senator Ewing?
Aye.
Frerichs?
Aye.
Lucas?
No.
Amdahl?
Aye.
Otten?
Aye.
Rodin?
Aye.
Valley?
Aye.
Rampelberg?
Aye.
There are 7 yeas, 1 nay, 1 excused.
By a majority vote of those elect, we hereby approve House Bill 1083. It will go down to the floor. Yes, did somebody say something? Okay, that concludes our calendar for the day. We will have 7 bills on Thursday, so that will be the amount of number of bills remaining. Is there a motion for adjournment? Motion from Senator Valley. Second from Senator Frerichs. Senator Watton. All those in favor, please say aye. Thank you. Motion carried. How soon I lose control.